Hello, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for November 29th, 2008. Wall Street, Barack Obama begins to take control in one of three news conferences this week, announcing his economic team in stages. President-elect Barack Obama said that while there has been confusion on what the overall direction might be of the Bush administration's plans, he nonetheless pledged to honor the commitments of the outgoing team. And so this week, the Federal Reserve, teaming with Treasury, pressed another button, and presto, $800 billion more is flooding into the system, and at least for this week, the latest plan struck a positive chord. The Fed and Treasury are purchasing $800 billion in troubled assets, $600 billion of mortgage-backed securities, and an additional $200 billion of asset-backed securities to help provide consumers with credit. Treasury is providing $20 billion of credit protection to the Federal Reserve, which comes from the $700 billion Troubled Assets Relief Program. The Fed said the new facility is designed to increase credit availability and support economic activity by facilitating renewed issuance of consumer and small business asset-backed securities at more normal interest rate spreads. Henry Paulson said that by providing liquidity to issuers of consumer asset-backed paper, the Federal Reserve facility will enable a broad range of institutions to step up their lending, enabling borrowers to have access to lower-cost consumer finance and small business loans. Here's what the Washington Post had to say in an editorial. Desperate times call for desperate measures, or at least unorthodox ones. That is one way to interpret the Federal Reserve's announcement yesterday that it would go into the consumer lending business to the tune of $200 billion in loans to holders of securities backed by auto, credit card, student, and small business loans. Simultaneously, the Fed became a mortgage business, offering to purchase up to $100 billion in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and other government-sponsored enterprises, or GSE, bonds, as well as $500 billion in mortgage-backed securities guaranteed by the GSEs. We've come a long way from old-style open market operations in which the Fed lends funds to banks, taking ultra-safe Treasury bonds or GSE securities as collateral. The consumer loan piece of the new program does include a $20 billion loss reserve supplied by the Treasury Department's Troubled Assets Relief Program, but there's no getting around the fact that the Federal Reserve has taken the kinds of credit risk normally associated with private sector banking onto its very public balance sheet. The Post continues in its editorial. This is an admission both that the nation's credit markets are badly broken and that the steps the Federal Reserve has taken so far, chiefly cutting its discount rate to 1%, have not repaired them. Notwithstanding that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been taken over by the government, the difference between their cost of funds and the Treasury is roughly 1.5 percentage points bigger than it was a year ago. In part, this reflects the panic market's extraordinary appetite for Treasuries, but also shows that the market had grown so risk-averse that it was demanding an ironclad government guarantee for Fannie and Freddie debt, which would take an act of Congress. The bottom line, until yesterday, was that 30-year mortgage rates were stuck at around 6%, not much lower than they were at this time in 2007. Meanwhile, car loans and the like, even for people with strong credit ratings, had all but dried up. Close quote. What a year. I don't know about you, but it's worn me out in more ways than one, including the wear and tear on the personal portfolio. Late Sunday night, we learned that the government had also moved in to save Citigroup, as the house that Sandy Weill built received $306 billion of U.S. government guarantees for some of its troubled mortgages and toxic assets, an amount that equates to about one-sixth of Citi's total assets. While Citigroup also received an additional $20 billion in cash on top of the $25 billion it previously received through the TARP. In return for the cash and guarantees, the government gets $27 billion in preferred shares, paying an 8% dividend. Citigroup is forced to lower its own quarterly dividend to 1 cent from 16 cents. And Uncle Sam, acting on our behalf, picked up warrants valued at $10.61 each. Shares in Citi, though, which closed at $3.77 on November 21st, finished the week, November 28, at $8.29. Bloomberg News said the following: the U.S. government is prepared to lend more than $7.4 trillion on behalf of American taxpayers, or half the value of everything produced in the nation last year, to rescue the financial system since the credit market seized up 15 months ago. The commitment dwarfs the only plan a approved by lawmakers, the Treasury Department's $700 billion troubled asset relief program. Bloomberg has done extensive work on this topic to come up with a figure, which was before the $800 billion in announced new Fed programs on Tuesday. And one of the many issues is the lack of transparencies. Regulators thus far have refused to disclose loan recipients or reveal the collateral they are taking in return. As for the funds we know have been injected into the banks as part of the TARP, Congressman Barney Frank, Democrat of Massachusetts, echoed my complaint of 5 or 6 weeks ago. The only purpose for this money is to lend. It's not for dividends. It's not for purchases of new banks. It's not for bonuses. There better be a showing of increased lending roughly in the amount of the capital infusions, or Congress may not approve the second half of the TARP money, said Frank. Gretchen Morgeson of the New York Times wrote, when the troubled asset relief program of the Treasury Department handed over $125 billion in taxpayer money to 9 banks a month ago, they were supposed to lend to small businesses, home buyers, and other worthy borrowers to keep the economy's gears in motion. Excuse me. At the time, the Federal Reserve Board and 3 bank regulatory agencies said, as Ms. Morgeson writes, the agencies expect all banking organizations to fulfill their fundamental role in the economy as intermediaries of credit to businesses, consumers, and other creditworthy borrowers. Alas, that admonition wasn't accompanied by any real requirements to lend. When the Treasury gave taxpayer billions to the banks, it attached no strings, so is it any surprise that lending is tight? Ms. Morrison continues, the problem is, unless the government puts serious pressure on the nation's banks to start lending, the value of assets used as collateral will fall as individuals and institutions everywhere are forced to sell. Ms. Morrison quotes Frederick E. Rowe of Greenbrier Partners in Dallas. The banks that have taken the taxpayers' money ought to be part of the solution, but they are acting like war profiteers. If I were in charge, I would haul them all down to Gitmo, put them in a room, and say, you have used the taxpayers' money to pervert our objectives. It is morally wrong, and we are not going to stand for it. I hope this all sounds familiar. That's what I've been writing in my Week in Review column, though I was substituting an LBJ-type figure for Gitmo. Of course, it's not that simple, really. Eugene Ludwig, former controller of the currency who predicted the crisis, told the Washington Post's Dave Ignatius, I'm angry too, and I don't want to pay for this mess, but we've got to keep this country together and help people who are losing their jobs and their homes. Otherwise, we're going to have bread lines. Ignatius also cites David Smick, author of a prescient book, The World is Curved, who in reviewing some figures the other week noted that banks' excess cash reserves, which normally total less than $7 billion, have recently approached $400 billion. A lot of that is taxpayer money that the banks aren't putting to use, as reported by Ignatius. Why? You'd have to be crazy to lend in this environment, says Smick. They aren't lending because it's going to be a terrible 2009 and the banks don't want to get caught. Theo Francis of Businessweek wrote, buyers are worried that the assets will continue to fall in value as the economy weakens, and sellers don't want to cut their asking prices, further battering their balance sheets. Meanwhile, the government's hasty retreat from the original TARP plan has only made the assets more poisonous. Some top-rated securities backed by home equity loans are valued at 40 cents in the dollar versus 67 cents when the rescue plan was announced 2 months ago. Just have to note that Francis wrote his piece prior to the Fed's latest move, which did improve some prices. I'm assuming your head is spinning about now. $100 billion here, $400 billion there, another $600 billion for other worthy causes. It's insane. All the while, the real economy just gets worse and worse, and now there's another issue on the table. Gary Duncan from the London Times on the threat that current developments could morph into, quote, bad deflation. Mr. Duncan says, while a dose of falling living costs might be benign, this could turn ugly of the sort of downward deflationary spiral first explained by Irving Fisher, the great 30s economist, emerges. Under the worst-case scenario, a negative feedback loop builds up as falling prices drain away the economic lifeblood of demand. As consumers wait for cheaper goods and businesses sell less and less, profits plunge, wages fall, and staff are laid off. A rising wave of bankruptcies and unemployment then further erodes demand as well as business and consumer confidence, leading to a still sharper retrenchment. Things turn really nasty if wage cuts and rising joblessness then trigger falling incomes, sparking a rise in the real value of debts relative to incomes. In Britain, the already heavy burden of personal debt would become unbearable for many households, triggering another wave of bankruptcies and economic pain. The above represents some of the broader themes in play this week as the markets staged a rally, the biggest gain for the S&P 500 since 1974, even as the fundamental economic news continued to be downright depressing. The revision for third quarter GDP showed a drop to minus 0.5%. New and existing home sales for October were awful, including with the latter, the largest drop in median home prices since records started on this topic some 40 years ago. Readings on consumer confidence that in one instance came in at a 28-year low. Personal consumption or consumer spending that declined a fourth straight month in October, down a full 1.1%, the biggest monthly drop since 2001. A reading on manufacturing from the Chicago area that is 1.8 above freezing, or 33.8, when 50 is the normal dividing line between expansion and contraction. And a report on October durable goods or big ticket items that exhibited a sickening drop of 6.2%. Throw in Cisco Systems' announcement it was shutting down for 5 days over New Year's to cut costs, Google's slashing of its contractor force, and the scotching of a deal between metals giants BHP and Rio Tinto due to falling global demand. And it all added up to further evidence the global economy is decelerating at light speed. China's chairman of its National Development Reform Commission said at a news conference that this crisis is spreading all over the world and its impact on China's economy is deepening. Economic indicators for November there were showing an even faster decline, though he gave no details. Then, Zhang Peng added, excessive production halts and closing of enterprises will cause massive unemployment, which will lead to instability. With the World Bank slashing its outlook on China's GDP from 2009 to 7.5%, below the key 8% level seen as necessary to avoid unrest, the preceding is not good. Elsewhere, Japan's industrial production for October fell 3%, another awful number, while German and French readings on business confidence hit 15- and 16-year lows. And in the UK, retailers Woolworths and MFI, which is a furniture retailer, filed for bankruptcy protection, thus imperiling 30,000 jobs between just these two. Consumer spending is cratering in Britain like everywhere else. The International Monetary Fund now projects that for the first time since World War II, the U.S. and EU-15 will contract simultaneously in 2009. But you want another example of how quickly things are truly deteriorating? Try South Korea. Just about 3 weeks ago, the government was forecasting the economy there would grow 4% in 2009. Now UBS says GDP will decline 3%. Lastly, I was driving around last Monday when I caught the great Morgan Stanley economist Stephen Roach on Bloomberg. Roach has a way of simplifying things, and despite the equity market's rally the past 5 trading days, one needs to consider that between housing, stocks, and the pension arena, the level of wealth destruction has been unprecedented. Add in the fact that if you are a longtime employee, say 25 years just about anywhere, you've seen your retirement funds evaporate in a nanosecond, especially if you worked on Wall Street or one of the larger banks. As Roach said, you just can't minimize the shock of it all. We have gone through a massive leverage-induced bubble that burst worldwide, and the damage won't be repaired for a long, long time. When it comes to the consumer, Roach said, we have entered a multi-year period of deconstruction. It's scary. So the above represents the real world these days, around the globe. While any stock jock knows that the street tries to anticipate a bottom in the market some 6 months before the economy itself begins to turn up, this time it's different. We all love rallies, and even some of my own positions have had a better time of it recently. But the truth is the American consumer is finished, and I have trouble believing 6 months from now we'll all suddenly be dancing a jig among May's flowers. Just a little note on the market action for the week. You want to know the definition of a bear market rally? NASDAQ is down 32% since finishing at 22.73 10 weeks ago, yet it's had two 10.9% advances over that same period, including this past week as it closed at 15.35. The S&P rose 12%, as I mentioned earlier, while the Dow Jones gained 9.7% to finish at 88.29, or about 100 points below where it closed on November 7th. The rally was fed in part in the latest joint Federal Reserve Treasury action to buy up mortgage-backed securities and aid the securitized loan markets. And mortgage rates did plummet, and qualified homeowners, those with good credit scores and remaining equity in their homes, rushed to refinance. I wasn't going to mention Black Friday out of principle, it's just not that meaningful a day anymore. Except then we had this sick case of a Walmart temporary employee on Long Island being trampled to death as the doors opened. Hundreds were oblivious as they ran over the poor guy. Man falls another 10 notches on my all species list. Have a good one. I'll be back next week.